Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In January, as the new Republican Congress opened for business, they decided to read the Constitution out loud on the House floor. This was part of a Tea Party-inspired push to compel every proposed bill moving through Congress to include the specific constitutional clause that justified it. Remember that? So we thought we would play for you a conversation and call-in that we did back in January, where we invited you to call in and tell us your favorite passage of the Constitution. We also had a debate between two constitutional scholars from right and left. And remember, this is a best-of show, so we won't be taking any calls, but the comments page is always open at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Hope you enjoy it. I think it's just right for the 4th of July. Here it is. Constitution according to the Tea Party, the Constitution according to you. As Congress resumes work today after its break following the Arizona shooting, it's with the new requirement to attach an explicit constitutional rationale for any new bill. It's a Tea Party initiative to highlight how little the Constitution allows Washington to do. But how little does it? We'll have a debate now with two constitutional scholars. We'll focus on the Tea Party's favorite passages of the Constitution and how both sides claim the Constitution is on their side as they prepare to re-debate health care regulation. And we will hear from some of you. We've been asking for your favorite passages on our politics website. It's afreecountry.org. Here to tackle your submissions are two scholars from relatively right and left. Ilya Shapiro, a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the libertarian-leaning Cato Institute. He's also editor-in-chief of the Cato Supreme Court Review. Ilya, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Nate Persily, the Charles Keller Beekman Professor of Law and Political Science at Columbia Law School. Professor Persily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Do you see this new requirement to have a constitutional authority statement, that's what they're calling it, a constitutional authority statement attached to any new bill as a symbolic gesture, or can you get specific, Ilya, about how it will change legislation in the 112th Congress?
Well, the devil, of course, will be in the details of what they do when they legislate and whether they'll just be paying lip service to it or whether they'll actually be debating the constitutionality and so forth. But I think it's certainly a good symbolic step, and we'll see, you know, if it even gets half a dozen or a dozen members of Congress to think twice before voting for something because of constitutional doubts, I think we'll have moved the ball.
Nate?
I think it's great. The more attention paid to the Constitution, the better. And I think it is mainly a symbolic move, but it's always nice for congressmen to think about whether what they're doing is unconstitutional or not.
Now, the two of you have agreed to field some listener favorites in a little bit to see how much agreement or disagreement there is from right and left on some aspects of the Constitution that people are thinking about. But let's dive right in. Now, with our own favorite, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, better known as the Commerce Clause, quote, Congress has the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. So, Ilya Shapiro, Congress has the power to regulate commerce among the several states, and I guess the question of the moment is, how does that relate to the current health care law?
Sure. Well, it depends on whether you're asking what that provision meant when it was ratified, or how it's come to be meant, given over 200 and especially the last 70 years of Supreme Court jurisprudence. The current standard is that Congress can regulate channels of interstate commerce, instrumentalities, meaning things and people in interstate commerce, and local activities that have in the aggregate have a substantial effect on interstate commerce. And, of course, it's that third prong that's at issue with Obamacare, and especially the individual mandate, the requirement that everybody buy a health insurance policy. I've filed briefs supporting the side, the states, and others who are challenging the constitutionality of the individual mandate and other provisions, most importantly because for the first time ever, this would be a requirement that somebody actually engage in economic activity rather rather than be prohibited from doing it or be told, if they're already engaged in it, how they are to engage in it.
And Nate Percelli from the Columbia University Law School, is it really all about the use of the word among in the constitutional in the Commerce Clause, that Congress has the power to regulate commerce among the several states as opposed to within the states?
No. I mean, I think that the argument with respect to the health care bill is whether forcing someone to buy something is a regulation of interstate commerce. I mean, no one doubts that health care can be economic in nature. I mean, 1/6 of the U.S. economy is tied up in health care costs, et cetera. And indeed, so much of the debate over the health care bill now is about how much it's going to cost, how much it might increase the deficit or lower the deficit. And so it has a hook to commerce. Everyone realizes that in interstate commerce, after all, because of the huge effect that health care has in the country. The novel argument that Ilya was mentioning is, well, does the Interstate Commerce Clause allow you to force someone to buy something? And so the court, we have a district judge who's basically sided with the argument that, no, you can't regulate inactivity. But that argument has nothing to do with really among this. I mean, you can spit it out.
Right.
But it's really about the activity.
Is there a direct precedent, in your opinion?
A direct precedent for the health care bill or for...
Yeah, for the individual mandate in particular.
Well, there are very few things to the plaintiff's credit in this that government forces you to do. They force you to participate in the draft. They force you to fill out a census form, maybe to participate in a jury. But the argument in favor of this is that, look, whether you think it's unprecedented or not, that the problems people believe that we're confronting with the healthcare problems are unprecedented, and they are certainly commercial in effect, and so therefore it's squarely within Congress's ability to regulate interstate commerce to force people to participate. And more importantly, I mean, one of the arguments is that, look, people are going to end up paying for someone else's health insurance anyway, because they're going to end up going to emergency rooms, and we all have to pay for it either with taxes or increased premiums.
And listeners, what articles of the Constitution or amendments to the Constitution would you like to hear? Or two competing constitutional scholars discuss. 212-433-WNYC for Nate Percelli from the Columbia University School of Law and Ilya Shapiro from the Cato Institute. And Ilya, just one more thing on the individual mandate before we go on to some other issues. Here is one possible precedent that people have been bringing up. It's Wickard versus Filburn, 1942, in which the Supreme Court held that a farmer who grew wheat just for the consumption of his own family violated federal agricultural guidelines enacted pursuant to the Commerce Clause. Though the wheat did not move across state lines, indeed it never left his farm, the court held that if other similarly situated farmers were permitted to do the same, it might have an aggregate effect on interstate commerce. So does it all come down to whether we see seeing a doctor as an individual decision or a commercial one?
Partially. It's not about whether the decision is economic or commercial or not. It's about whether there's activity involved. That's the way that my side has been framing this, and Nate will disagree with that, obviously, for the reasons that he already said. But Wicker versus Filburn does represent the outermost bounds of Supreme Court precedent in this area. The difference is that even in the height of the New Deal, which this was, the regulation was existing farmers have to meet their quotas and bring that crop to market rather than consuming it at home for the reasons that you stated, the aggregate effect, et cetera. But nobody had to become a farmer, and nobody had to buy wheat, say, to prop up crop prices or what have you. So I think that the individual mandate is a step farther. And moreover, studies show that health care outcomes and taxpayer spending on health care as well are driven more by diet and exercise than by ownership of health insurance policies. So if anything, there's greater warrant to require people to join gyms or buy healthy foods than to buy a health insurance policy, which
But that's irrelevant to the constitutional question, right? So, but let me follow up on an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal by a colleague of yours, Roger Pilon from the Cato Institute, who highlighted the way in which he thinks the Supreme Court has actually eviscerated the Constitution back in the 1930s. He sees it as having turned the document from a list of specific enumerated powers, in other words, these are the only things the government may do, to a free pass to redistribute and regulate at will. Is that the time period that you'd point to as well as having changed constitutional interpretation? And are you angry at the Supreme Court for that?
Yeah, that is the starting point. Some decisions in 36, 37, 38, and continuing through the 40s, and then up through the modern time as well. But yeah, Wickard is in there, and a few other cases where now, for example, you know, clauses like, you know, we put, getting back to the constitutional authority statements, you know, 90% of these will probably just tick the box Commerce Clause or Necessary and Proper Clause or General Welfare Clause, and these are misunderstood. For example, General Welfare Clause doesn't mean that Congress can just tax and spend for whatever it thinks is good, the only check being, you know, political, can it get the votes for it? The General Welfare Clause was actually a limitation. That is, the 18 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8 have to be exercised only in the general as opposed to the local or particular interest. Now, that is one example, and the other clauses have also been read very broadly, such that, you know, we're arguing at this extreme with whether you have to buy a health insurance policy or not.
Nate, do you want to weigh in on the Commerce Clause and the General Welfare Clause, I should say, in particular? A lot of people are calling in
to say,
General Welfare Clause. General Welfare means the government has the ability and the authority to act in the general welfare, however that's deemed to be seen.
Well, but that's sort of tied to taxation. But let's sort of just deal with first principles here, which is that the modern administrative state, the modern economy, would be seen as completely foreign to the framers of the Constitution, right? And so one argument is to say, well, if you want to give Congress power to regulate in today's economy, you've got to amend the Constitution. Another is to sort of look at the stream of history and say, all right, well, we have developed a interpretation of the Constitution which has allowed play in the joints and allows the government to work and to deal with new problems. Now, you can, you know, this debate has been going on since the Constitution was founded. And then there's a fundamental question, which I think Ilya is posing, which is, well, what are the bounds of federal power? Where do, you know, what powers are reserved to the states as compared to the federal government? And sort of, does the health care bill push the envelope? But realize what, you know, if you go down this path, it's not just, you know, dealing with regulation of wheat that you're talking about. Whether it's the federal drug possession laws, which, you know, prevent people and, you know, could put them in jail for possessing drugs, not even necessarily selling them. Whether you're talking about the late-term abortion ban, right, which is not about regulating commerce. This cuts both ways, that there's all kinds of federal laws preventing killing endangered species like the bald eagle. These are not commercial enterprises, but we've hung on the hook of the Commerce Clause all of these federal laws that, you know, we've come to see as part of the modern administrative state.
Want to come back, Ellie?
Well, I agree that if you reinterpret the Commerce Clause closer to be faithful to its original constitutional meaning, then a lot of different types of federal laws would be put in jeopardy. For example, there was a conviction 2 years ago. We filed a brief to try to get the Supreme Court to look at it, which it didn't. A guy robbed a pizza shop in suburban Cleveland, Ohio, and he wasn't prosecuted by the state authorities for robbery or anything like that. He was prosecuted by the feds for interference with interstate commerce because the pizza sauce, the wheat, and the mozzarella all came from different states. And that, this sort of thing goes on regularly, whether we're talking about drugs or otherwise. I think that we do need a fundamental rethink of that. But, and this is, I need to emphasize this, the challenge to Obamacare, and in particular the individual mandate, does not require overturning any Supreme Court precedent or challenging any existing laws other than the individual mandate.
Why not?
Because this is a step beyond. As I've been arguing and as the people who are challenging have said, even accepting Wickard versus Filburn, accepting Raich versus Gonzalez, which is a 2005 case involving medicinal marijuana, so whether it's wheat or weed, you know, there's an outermost boundary, never has, as I've said, the government required someone to engage in economic activity in the guise of regulating interstate commerce.
By the way, Nate, did I hear you correctly a moment ago? There are restrictions on abortion and individual drug possession under federal law that
That's
are based
right.
on the Commerce Clause?
Yes. That's the only, again, what else would they be based on? I mean, that's most federal law that we're familiar with, whether you're talking about the Clean Air Act or Endangered Species Act or, you know, Occupational Safety and Health Act, and so much of it is based on the Commerce Clause. And so, you know, the Federal Partial Birth Abortion Act, which was passed, has to be based on the Commerce Clause, because there's no clause in the Constitution giving one the ability to, you know, to ban abortions. Again, same with something like the Endangered Species Act. I mean, we tend to think that, you know, banning killing of the bald eagle is not about commerce. It's about, you know, protecting a national symbol, et cetera. But there isn't the protecting the national symbol clause of the Constitution.
On abortion, they could ban murder if they deem it to be murder without resorting to the Commerce Clause, couldn't they?
No. That is where it has to come out from. I mean, we could spin out some kind of argument that under Section 5 of the 14th Amendment you could ban murder based on that. But basically, most federal laws that federal criminal laws are based on the Commerce Clause. There are some exceptions there, but that's where.
Nate, I agree with that, and that's because the federal government does not have general police powers like states do. Federal government is limited to its enumerated powers in the Constitution, and that's why I agree with Nate's analysis of what he just said, that the Endangered Species Clause is a little more complicated, because you could argue that some species cross state lines and some don't. Then there is a federalism problem if they don't. There's plenty of federal laws that really shouldn't be there. We over-criminalize and over-federalize what we do, and that's kind of a cross-ideological complaint. Whether it's the Heritage Foundation or the Center for American Progress, they all have complaints about federal overreach and criminal and other types of laws.
All right, it's the Constitution according to the Tea Party, the Constitution according to you, and we'll hear what some of you are calling and writing in with respect to your constitutional questions, as Congress now has to issue constitutional authority statements with every new bill that is proposed, for Ilya Shapiro from the Cato Institute and Nate Persily from the Columbia University Law School. 212-433-WNYC. Stay with us. You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC AM and FM New York, AM 820, 93.9 FM, and WNYC.org.